Welcome to Baseball America's College Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk college baseball.
Welcome everyone to a Baseball America College Podcast. I'm John Manuel, along with our experts Ted Cahill and Mike Lanana. I want to remind you all Baseball America's college coverage is brought to you by Louisville Slugger, power in numbers. Visit them on social media at Slugger Nation. They sponsor the Baseball America Top 25 rankings. And Teddy, last night's call, it was kind of obvious, I guess, before we started the call, guys, that we were going to have a new number one team when TCU lost Friday and lost Saturday to the Anteaters. Certainly, as Mike Gillespie would say, certainly that was a big win for the UC Irvine Anteaters. But we had to pick a new number one team, and it wasn't 100% obvious, Teddy, but at the end of the night, we wound up with Louisville. And I guess what surprised me is not that Louisville went on number one at 15-0, they're undefeated. First time Louisville's ever been number one. I did not realize that. Considering they've made the College World Series several times since first getting there in 2007, I didn't realize that Dan McDonald's team had never gone to the mountain and been number one.
Well, not only is this the first time Louisville's been number one, but their highest was number two. And I knew they'd been number two to enter the season last year. But I thought they'd been number two before that, and they had not been. So they were number two coming into the year last year. That was their previous high. And then, yeah, they'd never been number one. Really, now that he's gotten a number one team, like the last thing that they have to do there is win a national championship. Pretty much every other box that I can think of has been checked off. I guess they don't have a college player of the year yet. They might be just a couple months away from that.
That will change. Yes.
Brendan McKay certainly looks like the best player in the country.
And he's the best hitter in the country, and he's in the mix for best pitcher in the country.
And he had a great weekend. 15 strikeouts on Friday night.
I guess he was fresh. Yeah. He had like a slight muscle pull.
It was a slight abdominal strain that caused him to miss his start the previous week, but he still hit. He didn't play at all that Friday against Eastern Michigan. Then he was a pinch hitter the next day, and then he played on Sunday.
For his career, this guy's a 341 hitter, so he's slightly above that right now at 548. He's 24-7 on the mound for his career with four saves and 274 strikeouts and 224 innings. That includes 29 this year and 11 innings. I mean, I wrote it in the All-America team capsule for him. He was freshman of the year. He was two-time first-team All-American. I have to double-check my 21st century research, but I'm pretty sure that Greg Swindell and Robin Ventura are the only two players in the history of the Baseball America, 36 years of All-America teams postseason, to be three-time first-team All-Americans. He's on his way to being a three-time first-team All-American. If he's College Player of the Year, three-time first-team All-American, and Freshman of the Year, and if he goes in the top two or three in the draft, which is very possible right now, I think he'll go down as the most accomplished player in modern college baseball history. Not the best, but the most accomplished. That's ridiculous. And then he makes it look so easy. I did not anticipate this kind of career for Brendan McKay. I mean, I just didn't.
I don't know that anyone did. I mean, like, even the Louisville guys, like, who probably thought he had this kind of potential, like, the fact that he came in right away as a freshman and was able to, he didn't start his career as a weekend starter, but he shoved his way onto weekends pretty quickly. And, you know, he moved past Funkhauser to be Friday starter last year. And, you know, he's their Friday starter. He hits in the middle of their lineup. Like, he really makes them go. But they have plenty of talent around him. I mean, it is the Brendan McKay show, but it's right. Also, you know, Cade McClure pitching behind him. And he's been really...
Cade McClure. Sorry. That's a do with Phil Hartman every time.
He's been very strong this season. Cleveland native, Metair, Ohio.
Shout out.
So he's been really good. They've got good guys in the lineup around McKay. Devin Mann, sophomore at second base, his first year starting. He's been really good. It's just up and down the lineup all throughout their pitching staff. Their competition this year has not been very difficult. I mean, that is the hesitancy, I suppose, with them as number one, is the level of competition that they've played. But if you're going to play a schedule like they have, you really have to hammer it. And they haven't slipped up, and they've hammered it. They're winning their games by an average of 7 runs per game. They're outscoring opponents by like 100 runs. It's like 139 to 37. they're doing all they can do, and the schedule will get tougher, and eventually they will lose a game. But right now, what they're doing has been very impressive, regardless of what the opponents have been.
And Mike, one of the things that we've talked about in rankings meetings is we're usually hesitant, especially early, that this was the first weekend of ACC play. But before conference play starts, we're hesitant to shuffle our preseason rankings without like a series loss. Florida State has lost a series, but we jumped Louisville over them. I guess the main reason being that Florida State's been very good. They haven't quite been as dominant as Louisville has. And they did lose a game this weekend in their ACC series opener.
Yeah, I mean, it really came down to, and I thought, you know, Teddy made a good point on our call last night when we were comparing the schedules, kind of similar strength of schedules, and you look at the records, obviously, and Louisville has taken care of business completely, and, you know, kind of made that an easier decision to leapfrog them at that point. And, you know, you're right. I mean, Florida State hasn't exactly lived up to what we were expecting out of them in the preseason. They've struggled a little bit on the mound.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we were looking for a jump forward out of Sands in particular at the front of that rotation. Holton's been great. Tyler Holton's been phenomenal for them so far. But yeah. For a team that returned its entire weekend rotation, it struggled a little bit more on the mound than you would expect. But, you know, certainly, I mean, this is kind of the classic, you know, Mike Martin team. I mean, it's a team that's going to end up, you know, right, you know, in a good position in the postseason. It's a team that, you know, offensively is going to grind you down and is going to work the count very deep every time and make pitchers work. And
yeah, more walks than strikeouts at this point in the season. I mean, I know their schedule again hasn't been super robust. It's been pretty decent, but 16 games in, they have more walks than strikeouts. That's amazing.
But that's FSU, you know, and you know, offensively, I mean, to me, I mean, I think it's the deepest group in the country, just with, you know, the luxury that they have of four switch hitters in the lineup. First of all, that's not something you see very often. And then just, you know, the experience with Taylor Walls and the power of Busby.
Right.
And they don't even have Drew Mendoza healthy. And once they get him, you know, that's someone who can make an impact as well as a freshman. So
it doesn't even feel like they're hitting on all cylinders offensively yet either, but they have a lot of cylinders to hit on. I mean, they really, offensively, I feel like their ceiling is as high as anybody's. So.
Even bringing back Quincy Niporte, a guy with a lot of experience and some pop in his bat as well. He's hit, I think, 2 grand slams so far this year. So
yeah, a little more pop out of Quincy, which is a big dude.
Yeah.
But he's kind of, his approach in the past, both his stance, everything, has not been geared for power, you know. So.
I'm so glad we got a Quincy Niporte reference out of Mike. That is definitely a Mike Lanana fave.
Mm-hmm. He's a fun dude.
He's fun. And I'm all about some Quincy Niporte. But yeah, I mean, I think there's no question that Louisville, what they've done so far this year, has been extremely impressive, you know, especially Brendan McKay. You know, I can echo, you know, all the things that you guys have said as far as just his accomplishments. And, you know, he's a guy who, even dating back to high school, he had a 72-inning scoreless streak in high school. I mean, he's pretty unflappable on the mound and clearly at the plate, too. I mean, he's just an amazing guy to watch at this level, just how much he's dominated both offensively and on the mound to this point.
You know, I am a little disappointed in the way the ACC schedule sets up that Florida State and Louisville are scheduled to meet this year, but it isn't going to happen until the final weekend of the regular season. May 18 to 20, Florida State will go to Louisville. And I just wish that, like, in a very greedy sense, I just wish that we could see it, like, I don't know, sometime in the next month.
Yeah, that'd be really nice. You know, it's I know we've been talking about this weekend. It's not the best slate in the world this upcoming weekend, although we do have conference play starting.
Yeah, I think we get into conference play around the country this weekend, but, you know, I think, again, there's only one top 25 series, just like this last weekend, and again, it involves Virginia.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I want it this weekend. That might still be a little early for it, you know, just the second weekend of conference play. But, like, I'm just saying sometime before, you know, May.
Yeah. No, I'm greedy, too. I want a blockbuster series every weekend, and I want to be at all of them. So I got spoiled by South Carolina Clemson the weekend prior to this one, because that series was bonkers. It was crazy. It was pretty wild. So I want more of that. But
they can't all be like that.
They can't. But, you know, speaking of the only top 25 series,
Well, yeah, sticking with ACC play, they while the rest of the country, for the most part, doesn't get into conference play until this coming weekend, the ACC, as we touched on there, started this weekend, and Florida State played Boston College, and Louisville played Pitt. Those are not marquee matchups, but we did have a marquee matchup with North Carolina and Virginia, two teams that were ranked in the teens, two very interesting teams. North Carolina was coming off of a series loss to Long Beach, and Virginia had only lost one game going into the weekend, but they had not really played the stiffest competition. So it was a step up for them. So they both had questions to answer. And North Carolina goes out. They win on Friday. They play a doubleheader Saturday. Virginia wins game one, setting up the rubber match. And then North Carolina came out all over Virginia, won the nightcap 12-2, takes the series, really makes a statement that's an important statement for North Carolina. They had finished ACC play so poorly last year, losing 10 of their last 15 games, finished in 11th place in the conference, missed the tournament basically as a result of that.
Right.
Both the conference and the NCAA tournament. And so for them to come out and get a series win to start conference play and to beat Virginia, a team they hadn't beaten in a series since 2012, and they play every year, they're in the same division. I think that was very big for the Tar Heels to keep that momentum going here early in the season.
Right, and Virginia is usually a team they play late in the year, too. To start out with that being your first ACC series, I mean, that's a tough test. I mean, going back to 2 years ago, to 2015, it was Virginia sweeping North Carolina at the end of the year that really kind of vaulted Virginia into the tournament. They ended up winning, obviously, the national championship, and North Carolina didn't make the tournament. And that was kind of the start of, you know, this two-year stretch where UNC hasn't been able to get into a regional. But, yeah, you know, I agree with you that I think this was a big statement by UNC this weekend. You know, to me, you know, having seen them a lot over the past couple of years, this is the best they've looked offensively to me. It seems like they actually have some, you know, some formidable threats in this lineup, guys who are going to be tough to pitch to. You know, looking at, you know, Brian Miller had a great series for them. He homered in the Saturday game, a leadoff hitter, a guy who works the count deep every time. Logan Warmoth has been great so far this year. He homered again, a line drive right down the left field line. You know, he's a guy whose draft stock is rising as a shortstop just with the way he's played. You know, Ashton McGee just going through the lineup. I mean, he's a freshman, but he's a guy with a great hit tool. Not necessarily a position, but a guy whose bat has always drawn rave reviews. And then you look at Zach Ahagan, a powerful bat there in the cleanup spot. He homered this weekend as well. You know, it's a tough lineup to pitch to, especially the top half of the order. And so that's something that stood out because Virginia had pitched well to this point. Obviously, the competition hasn't been as strong leading up to this weekend, but they had pitched well. Outside of Adam Haseley, who continues to just, you know, flummox opponents.
I mean, talking about how good Brendan McKay is,
yeah,
it becomes easy. Like, he overshadows Haseley as, you know, another two-way player in the conference. But Adam Haseley, he is an exceptional two-way player. And if he didn't have the misfortune of playing college baseball at the exact same time as Brendan McKay, he could be looking at, I don't think he'd be a three-time first-team All-American as a utility player. But he'd be looking at the best two-way player in the country in most years.
Yeah.
Instead, he's not even the best two-way player in his own conference.
Yeah, no, it is kind of unfortunate for Adam Haseley, but you know, we've taken notice. We see you, Adam Haseley, if you're listening to this podcast. He had another great weekend. He homered. He did his sixth home run of the year, which all six of them have come to the opposite field.
I don't really know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's a fun stat, but I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, it's just a stat. It's just what's happened. But
it is. But I'm just saying, you'd like him to yank a couple here and there. But he's not a guy that's going to hit for a ton of power. That's not his game.
No, but he's certainly hitting the ball with, a little more authority this year, which is something that, you know, head coach Brian O'Connor had talked about in the fall. He was swinging the bat a little bit better. And, you know, he's a guy who, obviously, he's a starting center fielder, very athletic. You know, he's not on the mound. You know, he's an upper 80s kind of guy, but he's got good feel. You know, he can sink it, he can cut it, he can, you know, flip in a little breaking ball from time to time. And, you know, he just knows what he's doing out there. He competes. You know, he's a guy, we've seen it time and time again from him, even as a freshman pitching in Omaha. he knows how to win. And, you know, he did the same, you know, on Saturday in the first game of the doubleheader, you know, after, you know, the day before, Daniel Lynch, a guy with, you know, comparable stuff, struggled against UNC. He came out there and allowed just one run in eight innings. And, you know, Tommy Doyle came out and finished the job. So, you know, Haseley is such an important player to that Virginia team for, you know, both what he does at the plate, his defense in center field, and also on the mound. I mean, yeah, it's unfortunate that he shares a conference with Brendan McKay. But I'll tell you what, when Virginia hosts Louisville in a couple weekends, that's going to be really fun to see those two players go at it.
No doubt. After the game, I was talked with Mike Fox, and the North Carolina coach said that Virginia is by far the best lineup that he's seen so far this year.
Yeah.
You know, they've played Kentucky, they've played Long Beach, they played Radford, they played St. John's. They've played some teams here.
Yeah.
But Virginia, he said, clearly is the best lineup they faced. And Virginia's going to score some runs with that lineup with Clement and Haseley and Pavin Smith. And I mean, it's and Jake McCarthy at the top of the order. It's a good lineup, especially those first four, much like North Carolina. They just kind of have to figure that pitching out. And, you know, I think we feel okay about their staff. At least I still do. Sperling just couldn't throw strikes on Saturday, and that was bad. Obviously, I did not see the Friday game with Lynch, but
yeah.
You know, I think they still have the arms there. I know I say this all the time that I just trust Carl Kuhn to figure it out, and but I do, and I think they'll be okay. You know, this weekend was tough for them, and it doesn't get any easier. They go to Clemson next week. It's a really tough start to the ACC season for Virginia, and they really, really need to try to avoid falling into a hole, whether it's 2-4 or you know, 1-5, it would very much behoove them to get a series win, as difficult as that's going to be, because Clemson has won something like, I want to say it's 11 straight now, ACC games, dating back to last year, sweeping through the conference tournament. They swept Notre Dame over the weekend. So it's going to be tough for Virginia. They can't afford to dig themselves too deep of a hole here, but, you know, in the ACC, winning road series is very difficult. In any conference, winning road series is very difficult. But to go on the road to North Carolina and to Clemson to start the conference play, I mean, that's I imagine when the conference schedule came out, the Virginia coaching staff was not thrilled to see trips to North Carolina and Clemson to start it off.
For sure, for sure. And I can, you know, that is going to be a very interesting series. You know, obviously a top 25 series, but, you know, just watching those teams go at it, I can see it being a high-scoring series just because, you know, to me on the mound, both teams are kind of similar. Not necessarily, you know, a blow-it-by-you kind of ace, you know, on either staff. You know, Virginia doesn't have a Connor Jones or a Nathan Kirby to go to. So I could see it, you know, especially after, you know, Virginia's offense was quieted by, you know, J.P. Bukauskas, who, you know, he's going to be one of the probably the first 5 to 10 picks in the draft just with his stuff. And, you know, he's touching 96, and then he was mixing in a changeup, which hasn't really thrown much in the past. And when he can mix in three pitches with a, you know, a plus slider and a mid-90s fastball, it's going to be a tough day at the ballpark. So I could see Virginia bouncing back offensively because they are a very strong lineup, and Clemson obviously can hit the ball quite a bit too, especially with that Seth Beer guy in the middle of the order. So I think that's going to be a fun series, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's a lot of high-scoring games.
Yeah, absolutely. So we kind of mentioned here the TCU loss to Irvine, two out of three, dropped the first two games, came back to win. They broke out the bats in game three, but they lost the series, and their starting pitching was the culprit here. Brian Howard, for the second week in a row, really struggled in the first inning. This week he gets knocked out. He got just one out, gave up eight runs.
Not so good.
Not so good. A week ago, he really struggled against LSU in the first. He got out of it and gave them five innings, which was critical, and they went on to win the game. He wasn't quite able to pull that act again this week. And then Nick Lodolo, also for the second week in a row, really struggled in the first inning. Last week, it was him getting knocked out of the game very early. This week, he kind of recovered a little bit, but the damage had been done. He gave up four runs, and Irvine didn't give up that lead. And then even Jared Janczyk on Sunday got in a hole. He was able to get out of it, and they went on to win the game, of course. But TCU's pitching, we've talked about how old, how experienced TCU is, and their starting pitching is certainly a part of it. Brian Howard is a senior. Jared Janczyk is a junior, or a redshirt sophomore. He's a three-year player. Lodolo is a freshman. But you know, they don't have like a lockdown guy
right
on Friday nights. Nick Lodolo will probably be that in a couple years, but he's not there yet. Jared Janczak and Brian Howard are both solid starters, but they aren't like elite aces.
Right.
And you know, to me, that's not like a weakness of this TCU team, like, but that is probably the weakest point, is that they don't really have a guy that, you know, you look at and say, well, okay, he's just going to go out and blow it past them on Friday night, and you know, we can survive a poor game offensively, or you know, we can rely on him to be a stopper or something like that. They don't really have that, and I think they'll be okay in the long run here. I imagine that some pitching roles are going to get juggled a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It would help if they had Mitchell Traver healthy, but the trouble with Mitchell Traver, as we've seen over the course of his college career, is that he's often not healthy. So it's difficult to rely on that. And I know they want to have him back. He's banged up right now, and he'll help them when he comes back. But you know, in the meantime, they've got to find some starting pitching to support what is a very potent offense.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, I agree with you. And, you know, you talk about not having that shutdown ace, and, you know, it'd be interesting to see if, you know, they had let Lucan Baker pitch this year, if, you know, he had been the guy. But obviously last year dealing with the injury, and, you know, you got to watch out for his health and, you know, what's best for his, you know, interest in his career. So, you know, no quibbles with that at all. But, you know, he was that guy last year when he was pitching. Where
for the
he
first
was,
half of the year, yeah. I mean, he stepped in pretty quickly as a freshman and took over the Friday night role. And then when he got hurt, you know, Janczak stepped into that and filled it pretty effectively. But yeah, I mean, Lucan Baker has that kind of potential, but he chose not to pitch this year. He chose to focus on hitting. And
yeah.
So far that is working out very well for Lucan and the Frogs. But,
yeah.
You know, having that kind of power arm on a weekend is always very helpful.
Yeah, you do kind of wonder. But yeah, I mean, TCU is going to be fine. I mean, this is just an aberration more than anything this past weekend. And, you know, UC Irvine has some bats, obviously. Kesson Hira in the middle of that lineup, a guy who can really, really swing it. So, you know, it's not by any means. I mean, going on the road at UC Irvine, it's not a walk in the park by any stretch. And, you know, you have to tip your cap to the Anteaters, too, for just the way that they approach TCU.
Absolutely. TCU drops to number 3, and you mentioned them going on the road. That's something no other team in the top 6 has done so far. They have a true road series, and they played in a neutral site tournament. None of these teams, with the exception of TCU, have a true road series yet. That's college baseball. That's non-conference scheduling. But props to TCU for scheduling a series and scheduling a road series that far away. You know, you'd like to think that if you're TCU, you would have liked to come out with a win. But I guarantee you that they came back from California knowing more about their team and having exposed some weaknesses that they now can work on throughout conference play and be ready for the tough road series that will come in conference season. They have to go to Lubbock this year to play Texas Tech, and then the tough postseason to come as well. So I think TCU, you know, it hurts a little bit in the short term here, but I think they will get long-term benefit from this, and it will be helpful to them. You know, they'll look to bounce back this weekend, and I feel pretty good about their ability to do so, but it was a bit of a tough trip to California there.
Right, and you also have the, you know, literally the weekend before their performance in Houston to remember too. I mean, obviously, I mean, this is a team that's challenged itself so far, and you know, you saw firsthand the success they had in that tournament in Houston against a loaded field. So I don't think there's a lot to worry about with TCU at this point. But you know, you look at the rest of the top 10, and though we shuffled the top 5 a little bit, we dropped Florida down a little bit. They struggled a bit this week, losing 2 to Florida Gulf Coast, and then playing really a tough series against Seton Hall. I mean, what's your take on Florida at this point? What's kind of going on with them? What's been the issue to this point?
Well, I mean, with Florida, they continue to pitch very well on the weekends, especially. Fado, Singer, and Coar continue to hum right along, although they do now have a loss on the weekends. Seton Hall got them in the first game of that doubleheader on Saturday against Coar. But their hitting is still, you know, they're still working some things out. And, you know, I know I personally thought they would hit pretty well this season. You know, I know there were some concerns coming into the year what they would look like without Peter Alonso. And, you know, I thought that, you know, they'd have some guys that would take a step forward, that they'd recruited some pretty good hitters. Austin Laneworthy would come in and be ready to go. And to some extent, some of that's happened. And to some extent, they're still looking for some answers offensively. And until they get them, they're going to continue to play close games with teams. And they are going to lose some games, because that's what happens when you play a lot of close games, is that you lose some games. And you know, you look at it right now, as a team, they're hitting .249. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not great. They maybe, you know, I don't want to say they're home run dependent necessarily. I'd want to look at this a little more, but you know, they have 15 home runs, and the home run ball saved them in the nightcap. Ryan Larson, who hadn't homered, he's a senior, he hadn't homered since his sophomore year. It was something like 100, more than 100 games between homers for him, and he cranks two in back-to-back at-bats, and they beat Cian Hall to win the series. But they've got some guys that are just scuffling a little bit here that just need to get it going a little bit. You know, Jonathan India was a freshman All-American last year. He's a preseason All-American this year. He's hitting .250. You know, people are always asking what's wrong with J.J. Schwartz. He had such a good freshman year. He hasn't really been able to duplicate that. He's hitting .234. Laneworthy is hitting .222. Deacon Lippitt's hitting .211. Mike Rivera's hitting .185. I mean, they need some of those guys to get going. They don't need all of those guys to get going. They just need a couple of those guys to get going.
Right.
And if they do that, they have the pitching to support it. They just need to give themselves a little bit more support, because when you have Fado, Coar, Singer, you have Tyler Dyson in your bullpen, and Nick Horvath has pitched very well out of the bullpen, and Michael Byrne, you know, when you have these guys, you don't need to give them a ton of support, but you do have to, they need a little bit. And, you know, that helps them mentally as well, that they don't feel like they have to keep throwing up zeros. So I definitely believe that Florida's offense will get it going, but now that SEC play is starting next week, they really need to get it going here. They've right. played their schedule. You know, if you just look at the names on the schedule, it might not look that daunting to this point, but they've played some teams that pitch very well. You know, Miami, for all their struggles offensively, has pitched well this season. Seton Hall always pitches well. And those guys that they were throwing out there this weekend, they're very good. And, you know, Columbia, I know that, you know, you look at it, you just say Ivy League school, but you know, that's a team that pitches. And William & Mary's
had some success in recent years.
They have. And William & Mary was in regionals last year. So, I mean, those are your four weekend opponents for Florida to this point. And those are better opponents than maybe their records and their, you know, for some of them, their names would indicate. But Florida plays Florida State on Tuesday. That's a series that they've owned in recent years, obviously winning back-to-back super regionals against the Seminoles.
Right.
So Florida State is going to present a challenge, and Florida's going to have to be ready for that. And Florida State, you know, is going to want some revenge against their rivals. And then they go to Auburn, and Auburn has another really strong pitching staff. So this week is going to be a tough week for Florida again, and it would, if they can get their offense going, they'll be just fine, but they are facing some more very difficult teams this week.
Right. Yeah, certainly, you know, Keegan Thompson's been a nice story at Auburn this year, coming back from Tommy John and the way he's pitched, so it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, he matches up.
Yeah, with Auburn, I mean, you've got Keegan Thompson, Casey Mize, and Davis Daniel. I mean, that's a very strong trio, and they've pitched very well to this point. Their level of competition hasn't been quite there either yet. That's a team that, you know, it's trying to bounce back after a really tough season, and you know, they're collecting some wins right now, and this weekend against Florida is really going to be their toughest challenge by far, and we'll see how that team responds to it, if they're ready for that step up as SEC play begins in earnest.
Right. But yeah, I mean, you look at, I mean, obviously there is some shuffling in the top five this week, but you look at the rest of the top 10, the back half of it, everyone had a winning weekend, made it pretty easy just to keep everyone in place.
A winning week even. Everyone piled up some nice wins. Fullerton went to Arizona State and swept a midweek series and pulls out a pretty hard-fought series against Gonzaga.
Yeah, who can pitch too.
Yeah.
They've got a good pitching staff. So that Friday night game, you know, Connor Siebold and Eli Morgan traded complete game efforts. That game was a crisp hour and 59 minutes, which wouldn't mind seeing some of those over here.
You have a 2.5 hour UNC Virginia game, which probably averages 4 hours.
That broke a record, yeah. Probably, because that was a quick game. Adam Hazley and freshman Luca Delatri both shoved in that game. Both did very well. Low scoring 2-1 game, the first game of that doubleheader. But yeah, I mean, you look at the rest of this top 10. I mean, Clemson, as we talked about earlier, continued to roll, sweeping Notre Dame. And then, you know, South Carolina had a nice bounce back after losing that series to Clemson. This past weekend, both Clark Schmidt and Will Crow continued to dazzle on the mound. Both did really well. Clark Schmidt struck out 12. And after walking 7 people last week, he walked no one against Michigan State, which was good to see for him just to get his feel and his best stuff back. And then, you know, Will Crow continued to pitch really, really well. I mean, he's a cool story as well. And, you know, there'll be a feature on him from yours truly in our next issue of Baseball America. So stay tuned for that. But outside of the top 10, things are a little messier. We switched things up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we stayed pretty, the top 15 stayed pretty normal, but, pretty much as it was. Texas Tech moves to 11 ahead of Arizona after crushing Arizona, I suppose, in a midweek game.
Yeah.
And North Carolina moves ahead of Virginia. Lafayette, Haynes in there, moves up to 14 from 15 after a sweep of St. Peter's. But yeah, then Baylor makes a big jump from 24 to 16. Mm-hmm. They took a series against Houston, and they beat Sam Houston State in a midweek. Another very nice week for Baylor, which at 14-2 has matched the best start in school history.
Yeah,
they're still rolling. They carried that momentum that they got from the Shriners Classic in Houston into this week, and they're really. I mean, we talked about them a lot last week, but I remain very impressed with the Bears. That Houston team they beat is a solid team,
mm-hmm.
and you know they were able to go in there and take the first two games of that series, and you know just continue moving right along, keep building that momentum. They've got Big 12 play starting this week against West Virginia. They've got DBU coming in, or they go to DBU, sorry, in the midweek. So it's another tough week for Baylor. But the Bears have been solid so far, and I know you were very impressed by that win over Houston as well.
Yeah, because as I've noted before, I like Houston's team. I think it's a good team and has a chance to make some noise later this year. But yeah, I've been really impressed by Baylor and their resume so far. And honestly, I mean, you look at them and you look at the Big 12 as a whole, you know, it's you talk to any Big 12 coach and, you know, they always mention, yeah, 3 teams in Omaha last year, you know, a conference that maybe doesn't always get its due. But it's been, you know, once again, a strong conference this year. And now you have Baylor kind of entering that picture. And, you know, West Virginia is a team that's on the cusp as well.
Well, we've got 4 teams in the Big 12 ranked right now.
Yeah.
We've talked about Oklahoma for 2 straight weeks. They're 17-2. The schedule has been bad since Long Beach State, but they are 17-2. And they won that series against Long Beach State.
Right.
So we're talking about Oklahoma. So that's 5. West Virginia has been up and down to start the season. I honestly don't know what to make of the Mountaineers, but I think they're going to be a difficult team in the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem poised to take a step forward and potentially make that regional that they've been you know trying to get to for a few years here now under Randy Mazey. And you know,
and then Texas winning a series against UCLA.
Texas is 12-5 now.
They're off to a good start.
You know, if they hadn't lost that series at Stanford last week, you know, I could very easily see them in the top 25.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that's a tough conference, and the Kansas schools are out there doing their thing. Like I don't want to slight Kansas and Kansas State, but you know it's going to be a tough year in the Big 12. I mean, we knew that You know, when they had three teams in Omaha, when we ranked TCU number one, when we ranked three teams coming into the year. But, you know, it's going to be a tough year. K-State is 12-4. Kansas is sitting there at 7-8, and three of those losses, or is it four of those losses, are to Stanford. Mm-hmm. Another one's to Virginia. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is a rough and tumble conference. And, you know, if the Big 12 hasn't gotten its due in recent years, like, I don't think anyone's going to be able to ignore them this year. I think they're going to be sitting pretty well when the season ends, in terms of teams in the NCAA tournament, in terms of hosting, national seeds, all the rest of that. I think the Big 12 is going to receive the recognition this season.
Definitely. And then, you know, you have a team in Oklahoma State, too, that hasn't yet really hit its stride so far this year, but certainly a team with, especially the pitching that it has with Buffett back at the top of the rotation.
And he's still trying to find it. Like,
yeah,
Jensen Elliott and Carson Teal pitched very well this weekend, and whereas Buffett has been scuffling a little bit. If Buffett gets it, and when they get Trey Cobb back in their bullpen, you know, and in general, that's another team. You know, Rob Walton was our assistant coach of the year last year. We feel pretty good about their ability to piece things together on the mound. So, you know, I think we talked a lot about the Cowboys internally over the weekend after they lost a game to South Dakota State. But, you know, they stay at number 23 this week, and you know, they're moving along in the generally the right direction since losing that opening weekend series to Grand Canyon. They're 9-6, and you know, they got a couple weeks here before they start conference play.
Right,
Big 12 with an uneven number. They don't all start at the same time, but they'll get into it, and they get into it in a big way in 2 weeks at TCU. So they got one last week to kind of work it out. Then they have Bedlam, the first Bedlam game on next Tuesday, and then TCU. So it's coming, and it's going to come fast when it comes. So this week New Mexico comes in, and that's a tough team, and then Northwestern State, and they really need to have a nice solid week so they can build towards what will be a huge week for them.
Yeah, definitely As The Weeknd sings in one of his best songs on his newest album, I Feel It Coming. So it's coming for Oklahoma State. They need to get it together, and that TCU series is going to be a lot of fun. So.
It will be. We also had two teams come in this week. Florida Gulf Coast enters at number 21, almost exactly 4 years after their last top 25 appearance. Their last one was March 11, 2013. These are the kinds of things I find when I dive into our top 25 history. But Gulf Coast comes in. Their 10-game winning streak was snapped on Sunday, the loss to Ohio State, but they had won 10 straight games prior to that. They won two in the midweek against Florida. They won the series against Ohio State. That's coming off of a series sweep at UNC Wilmington. The Eagles have really, really been impressive after a sub-500 season last year. They've bounced back in a big way. And then Michigan comes in at 24. They swept Lipscomb this weekend. They're 12-3. All of that, of course, happens away from Ann Arbor. This was their first true road series of the year, but they are still traveling because it is cold and snowy in Michigan in February and into early March, typically. So they have to start on the road, and you know, they have very much conquered their road test. They went 7-1 in a California trip, and now they go out and they sweep Lipscomb. This weekend they get to go home. They get to stay at home, play Northern Illinois. But the Wolverines roll in here, road warriors to start this season.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, Michigan was a team that in the preseason we discussed for the top 25, and you know, so far, I mean, I guess maybe we should put them in there because obviously they're in there now. So far, they've been.
I'd pick them as my Omaha sleeper. I was deciding between them and Nebraska, and I really wish I had picked Michigan instead of Nebraska.
But yeah, between them and Florida Gulf Coast, I mean, you look at what Florida Gulf Coast has done, obviously this past week, you know, sweeping the midweek series against Florida and then, you know, beating a solid Ohio State club and really taking it to them in, you know, a couple of those games. You know, the basketball team has a nickname Dunk City. I think we still need to come up with a good nickname for the baseball team. I'm proposing Homertown just to keep with the the theme of you know, cities, towns, etc. But they're not necessarily
fulfilled. I don't think they live up to
They probably don't hit enough homers to make that work. That's why I don't feel great about it. And listen, I'm open to suggestions. Go on Twitter at mlanana. And if you're listening right now, do it right now. Brainstorm some ideas. If I like it, I'll retweet you. But yeah, no, they've certainly
they've only
been...
hit 11 homers this season, so, okay, so Homertown is not going to work.
Homertown doesn't work, but
you can read a lot about Florida Gulf Coast and Off the Bat this morning over at baseballamerica.com. So read that, and then think through what you digest what you read that I wrote, and then think of a nickname to give to the Eagles, because they it's been a great story, and it's been a great start. They're in the midst of a stretch where they play 13 straight games against teams that made regionals last year. They're about to finish it Wednesday against Florida State is the end of that stretch. So far they're 10-2 in those games, and that is pretty impressive. Because the game, not only are they playing teams that were in regionals last year, they're playing teams that we think were are going to be pretty good. UNC Wilmington has been shaky to start the year, but that was the CAA favorite entering the year.
It's a tough offense, too.
It is.
Especially in that ballpark.
And they hadn't been swept. Wilmington had not been swept at home since, like, 98, and Gulf Coast did that.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, Florida is a top-five team. And Ohio State is sitting around 500 this year, but they've played a very difficult schedule. I don't know how much we want to read into RPI at this point, but they're top 50.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a team that is a difficult team, and you know, Gulf Coast finds a way to win the series. And, I've just been very impressed with Gulf Coast. They brought in a large recruiting class that was pretty heavy on junior college players. They really needed some pitching after last year. And those guys, they've really hit on those guys. Julio Gonzalez is their leading hitter. The shortstop was a transfer. Carter Crawford, their best starting pitcher, was a transfer. It's the younger brother of Jonathan Crawford. And, you know, they had to replace an All-American in second baseman Jake Knoll. And they've been able to do that. And, you know, so, again, I am very impressed with what Gulf Coast has done. It's been a program that's been building. It's still a very new program. Dave Tollett, their coach, won his 500th career game last Sunday against Wilmington was his 500th career win. All of his wins have come at Florida Gulf Coast, and all of Florida Gulf Coast's wins in their program history are under him. He founded this program in 2003 was their first year in Division II, and they moved up to Division I 5 years later. And they've never made the NCAA tournament, but they are very much gunning for that this year. They've tried to build a schedule that could get them in at-large contention if they win the games, and they are winning the games. You know, so we'll see where they are later in the season, RPI wise and everything. But you know, we mentioned Michigan swept Lipscomb. That was the A-Sun favorite. Right now, Florida Gulf Coast is clearly looking like the best team in the Atlantic Sun, and they will be tough to beat throughout the season, but especially in conference play.
Yes. For sure. You made a pretty deep dive into Florida Gulf Coast there.
Honestly,
you also have your off the bat.
When I was writing off the bat last night, I realized, like, when I was, like, getting close to wrapping up that section, I was like, oh, I really lost control of this section, didn't I? Like, I really got wrapped up in it. I really think it's a fantastic story, where they've come from. When I was talking to Coach last night, he was talking about, you know, how he actually had reflected on his 500th win. A lot of time coaches and players don't really reflect on these milestones until the off season at the earliest. But he said that he was sitting on the plane ride home from Wilmington, and he had a chance to reflect on it. And, you know, he was just talking about how far the program has come, that, you know, when he got there, they didn't have a whole lot of money because it's a startup program in Division II. And, you know, the players were, when they would go on the road, they were sleeping four to a room, and they're eating a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches just because they didn't have resources.
Hey, don't knock the PB&J. There's a lot of protein in the PB&J.
I don't think I could have played for Gulf Coast, first of all, because I'm awful, but second of all, because PB&J, I'm not on it. Don't at me. But they have come a long way. You know, this is a program that's produced Chris Sale. They've produced several All-Americans. You know, I mentioned Jake Knoll. Chris Sale was as well. I mean, it's a program that's come a long way in a very short amount of time. And, you know, we talked at the start of this about how Louisville is, you know, chasing that last thing for the program, a national championship. Well, you know, Gulf Coast is chasing the next thing for their program, and that would be to get to a regional. And if they're able to do that, it would be a huge step for them.
Right, right. You know, shifting from Teddy's shameless self-promotion of his off-the-bat piece, which you should read. I encourage you to read it. And then
there's also some good stuff about North Carolina in there.
Yeah, yeah. So do read it, and then do tweet at me your nickname ideas and other funny things, because I'm all about that. But shifting from that, let's wrap up and look at the back end of the poll here. You know, we had some tough decisions. There were a lot of teams that we were talking about bringing in. We keep Washington in at number 25. And, you know, that's a team that really, I mean, there's a lot to like about the team. I mean, we had them ranked. We've had them ranked fairly high, you know, coming into this year and throughout the season. But they're kind of struggling just a little bit right now. And, you know, I think both of you and I were talking about it earlier, and it really, you point to the offense with them because they've pitched well for the most part. But, you know, what do you kind of make of the Huskies at this point, and do you see them figuring it out?
Well, you know, Washington at this point is sitting at 9-6. They're 2-0-2 in weekend series. They haven't really played much in the way of midweeks. It's just the way they set up their early season schedule. They play four games more often instead of midweeks because it's hard to play midweeks in Washington. There just aren't that many options, and the weather right now means that it's hard to play at home.
Yeah.
In any event. So they've played mostly four-game series. I think they intended to play all four-game series, but one of them had a rainout. And, you know, they've split two of them, and the competition level has not been outstanding. Santa Clara, St. Mary's, Sacramento State, and Indiana State, all solid, nothing marquee there. And yeah, I don't, they're a little tough to figure at this point. You know, when you're playing these four game weekends, that means you have to have a starter in there that you won't once conference play starts. So that makes it a little difficult to evaluate. But Demers and Bremer, they're two guys. The two guys they're really going to rely on, two of the big reasons why we rank them where we rank them coming into the season. They've been good. Joe Demers, 2-1, 251, mm-hmm. 18 strikeouts, 2 walks, and 28 and 2/3.
Yeah.
Noah Bremer, 1-2, 288, 27 Ks, 14 walks, and 25 innings. Like, that'll play. Jordan Jones has been pretty solid, too. But offensively, that's a team that's hitting 261. You know, they're not scoring a ton of runs. It's not a team that's going to mash. It is definitely not. Seattle is not Homer City at all. That's
Homer,
not
Homer Town.
Homer Town. Homer Excuse Town. Me. That's not the way that they're going to play. That's not the way that they want to play. That's not the way they're designed to play. But it means they have to manufacture runs, and that's always a little bit harder to do. It means you're going to play in more close games. And like I said with Florida, when you play close games, sometimes you lose close games. You know, so that's a thing that they're going to have to figure out offensively here. That, you know, they just, Jack Meggs is out here hitting 309. MJ Hubbs is hitting 359. Like, those two guys are two of the top hitters. AJ Graffinino at 304. Nobody else that's played more than, you know, 10 games is hitting above 300.
Right.
And that just makes things tough for you. When you're a team that isn't a power producing team, and then you're also just not getting on base as often as you'd like. MJ Hubbs has a 432 on base to lead the team, Joey Morgan's at 433, MJ Hubbs at 432, no one else above 400, and that's a problem for them.
Right.
They need to get guys on base so that they can play with that West Coast action, you know, whether that's sealing a base or bunting them over, hit and run, whatever. You need to have guys on so that you can move them over and move them in. Like, that's the West Coast style they're trying to play, and that works. But it only works if guys get on base. And that's what they have to figure out how to get going here. And I do believe in the team still. You know, Demers and Bremer at the front of the rotation. Hubs and Meggs are, you know, experienced guys. Graffinino seems like he's taking that step forward. But they need a little more offensively.
Yeah, no question. And that's really, I mean, that was kind of the bigger question with them coming into this year, just because they do have some veteran guys to lean on, but for the most part, it isn't a super deep offense. And like you said, it's a team that needs to rely on that West Coast style of baseball. But yeah, certainly from a pitching standpoint, I know Joe Demers, in the offseason really worked on his craft. And, you know, last year, you know, he struggled just with inconsistency of his secondary stuff. He'd have the fastball, but he didn't always have the breaking ball. And he's a more well-rounded pitcher this year, and that's something that he's worked on, and obviously it's paid dividends so far, you know, for him. And Noah Bremer has been really a bulldog for 3 years now. This is his third season with Washington. He's been, you know, one of the more consistent Friday guys in the Pac-12, you know, the past couple of years. So, you know, as long as they have those two guys rolling, they're going to have a chance to win every series. But I'm really interested to see, you know, the series with Utah. That's their series this upcoming weekend. And, you know, Utah as a team last year, obviously, you know, they had a losing record in non-conference play, and they went on to win the Pac-12.
Losing record overall.
Yeah, and a losing record overall. But so far, they're off to a good start this year. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how those two teams match up.
Well, so when they played last, it was the final weekend of the season. Washington went to Utah, it was a de facto Pac-12 championship series. They don't have a tournament, but they had, in essence, a three-game championship series last year.
Yeah.
Washington won the first game in Salt Lake City. They were without All-American closer Troy Rollins that weekend, and Utah made them pay. They won the next two games. They won the Pac-12 to go to the tournament. So this is now the rematch of that. We're getting it on the first weekend of Pac-12 play instead of the last weekend of Pac-12 play. And it will be, this time it's in Seattle. So I'll be very interested to see how the rematch goes this year. It's a fun storyline to follow.
Yeah.
And it's two teams that, you know, that have started the year pretty solidly. You know, again, Utah, it's a much different look this year than last year. And that should serve them very well when it comes time at the end of the year to look at potential at-large bids. Last year, they had no chance as an under 500 team. This year, the way that they've played to this point, they're picking up not only wins, but some pretty quality RPI opponents. And that should put them potentially in a position where they could, make a return trip if they are not able to repeat as Pac-12 champions.
Right.
So, I mean, like you said there, I mean, that's one of, we hit on a few very interesting series here in the coming week. It's not, this weekend does not have, it's not big in marquee series. It's not big in top 25 series, just the one, but there are a lot of very interesting storylines here as teams move into conference play more throughout the country, not just the ACC and a couple other conferences, really almost many more conferences, the majority of conferences are going to be in a conference play this weekend. And that's when we really get down to the nitty gritty and, these teams really start knocking each other off. I mean, when we look at the top 25 this week, there are so many teams that we could have considered to come in.
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned Oklahoma at 17-2, Missouri's 15-1 and hasn't lost since opening day. And, there are a lot of teams like that out there. San Diego's having a fine start to the season.
Mm-hmm.
I could list probably a dozen teams. Right now there's a large pool for the top 25. But as we get into conference play, you know, we start finding out a little more about all these teams, and that pool start to shrink. And sometimes that's a good thing for us when we're making out a ranking, and sometimes it's a bad thing. Right now, if your team's not in the top 25 and you're off to a great start, you know, we probably considered you. There are just a lot of teams out there that are having some very impressive starts to the season.
Yeah, I'm looking at our worksheet right now that we put together for our top 25 call, and there are several teams listed here as on the radar. And yeah, you just, you know, that was the tip of the iceberg, the teams that you mentioned. So certainly, you know, we're keeping an eye on all those teams that have gotten off to those great starts. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how these teams fare, and, you know, all our teams in our top 25, as you mentioned, as, you know, teams start conference play, as they face tougher competition, you know, that's when we're really going to know who the top dogs are. Because it's one thing to do it in a softer non-conference schedule, and it's another thing to do it in conference, you know, teams that you're familiar with, that are familiar with you, and obviously teams that are closely matched. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm glad that more conferences are starting conference play this weekend. And, you know, it should be another fun weekend. We'll see how the top 25 shakes out.
Yeah, very much looking forward to it. So check out all of our stuff over at baseballamerica.com. There's plenty of stuff from the weekend. There will be more to come throughout the week. And we'll be back on Thursday over on the Facebook page to take a look at the games for this weekend. And we'll be back here next Monday on the podcast, and we'll have a new top 25 to talk about. There will be a new off the bat for me to push on you. And we'll have all sorts of new fun things to talk about. So thank you for listening. Obviously, we lost John here a little while ago. You might have noticed.
He was a little quiet, a little more quiet than he usually is on podcasts.
But thank you to John for being with us here at the start. Thanks to Mike. And thank you for listening. I've been Teddy Cahill.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.